towards that, and they got an exciting and eclectic blend of show on tap for you. And Ashley's going to play sort of a starring role today, because you know what? This is the kind of show we get text calls all the time where they say, like, "Hey, Dane, you know, are you really on the road? Are you going to be on the road? Are you walking the walk? Are you living the brand?" Right? And then, of course, a little bit of that leaks into our beloved and super qualified and essential staff, and Ashley is that as well. And so Ashley, you actually went on the road yourself. You felt the pressure of the public, right? That you needed to get out there and take your own kind of family road trip, and you did it.
I did. And it was super fun. We ventured on up to Michigan. Not super north, though.
We went the exotic, far-off land
of
to the left.
Cassopolis, Michigan. Yes. It's like right on the border of Michigan and Indiana, so it wasn't really far. It was like a two-hour drive. We have a little lake house up there, so we like to go there every so often with some family members. But it's one of those places where, you know, sometimes you don't have to do things. Doing nothing is the vacation.
Is that hard? You know, for people, you know, in this, let's say, you know, your generation, you're always connected, right? You've got so many different things, you know, your phone and all the social media and all sort of the pressures of kind of staying connected. Is that something that, I know you said it's your family's cabin, so maybe you guys have a tradition where you guys do that. Is it hard to kind of just unplug?
It is, especially in our industry. We need to constantly be in communication with people to make sure things are running smooth. You got numbers there. You got an email here. But it's nice when you have that excuse. When you don't have the excuse, you feel guilty. You're like, oh, I should be, you know, doing this or checking social media or looking at this or texting so-and-so. But having the excuse of like, you know what, I'm on vacation with some family. We're by a lake. We're fishing. We're eating good food. It's a good excuse.
How long does it take you to kind of relax? You know, that is the kind of a vacation that I'm not necessarily used to. We got a chance to do that. Did a family road trip up to the North Woods of Wisconsin to a cabin where you had bad cell reception, no like internet, you know, there's no Wi-Fi in the cabins. Very super nice, really nice cabin. You're not huge or anything like that, but nice. You know, it wasn't like you're in a tent out in the middle of the woods somewhere. It was kind of nice and really nice, and there was a lake and all sorts of stuff, but just not that whole, you're not sitting there watching TV the whole time. And I tell you, it took me, and I built in an extra day, sort of like a chill day, just to kind of decompress. It took me at least a day and a half before I think physically resigned myself that, like, okay, we're just going to hang out, you know, and just kind of relax.
It is odd. Like, we don't have cable up there, and we don't have internet up there. We brought a little MiFi thing in case we needed to get on internet for safety. So that's kind of a tease, because you're like, oh, I could be checking this or watching Netflix or something, especially if it's raining or something. Right. You got to find, like, the board game. You got to bust out the Monopoly.
Board game. So right. Do you guys do that? You played the...
Yeah, we play Risk. Have you ever played Risk?
Sure, of course.
It gets intense.
Now, Risk is kind of complicated. It's harder than, let's say, Uno.
Yeah. You know, oh, yeah, and it's super fun. It's like a tradition. We always play Risk, and we bring up movies. We bring up Tremors. Have you ever seen that movie with Kevin Bacon?
With the earthquake or something?
Oh, it's awesome. It's about these killer worms. I think it's like a 90s movie. It's super cheesy, super fun, and it's just, we've always done it as we were kids, and we played Risk and watched that movie and just kind of hang out.
Wow.
So.
Yeah,
we keep the tradition alive.
It's great. That's a great road trip. So good that you did that. We're going to take our own kind of road trip with the show today. We're going to be all over the board, an eclectic blend. We're not going to do a ton of, we're not going to do much food at all, but there is the Air and Water Show is here, and we mentioned a little bit with Scott, is that we've got the British Red Arrows are in town with us, the first time in 11 years they've been here, and for this visit to America, Chicago is the first stop on that. So excited to have a little bit later on in the program, probably about 2:30 or so, we're going to have squad leader Adam Collins on with us to hear a little bit about that, you know, going to Chicago and bringing, you know, a squadron of your friends with, and I've seen some of the pictures, we'll have them up at WGN Radio, they are amazing. And then when it comes to sights and some of the things happening, it's the classic that is down at Route 66. It's a car show that's 500 cars strong down at the drag strip there. And then there's also a time machine that transports you back in time. All sorts of 50 stuff, pinup girls, all the cars, plus those classic cars. And this is something you don't see at a regular car cruise, is the cars actually racing against each other on one of the top tracks. And so they're doing that, plus food and music and a bunch. And so the reigning Miss Classic, Carolyn Anna Rose is going to be joining us, and so we're going to talk about that, plus a great cause associated with it. And then when it comes to nighttime and it comes to racing in NASCAR, one of the favorite destinations, not only for viewers and attendees, but also the drivers themselves, is Bristol Motor Speedway. It's a coliseum of speed. I think it holds about 140,000 people there on that track. And it's the Bristol Night Race. And so Ricky Craven is going to join us. You know him, of course, from his great career in NASCAR as a driver from one of the, well, I don't say one. There was a number of the most exciting moments in racing. And then, of course, he does some great work with Fox. So he's going to join us as well. Gary Granson with the, it's the Stallions Gate Mustang and Ford Club. They've got a big event coming up. And I think we're going to be talking with Larry McIntyre from Westmont. I have said, and I'll contend, one of the best cruise nights that happens weekly in the suburbs all around Chicagoland. It is one of those kind of shining stars. So quick break. We're going to come back. We're going to go out to the reigning Miss Classic out at Route 66. So keep it here on the road with Dane, 720. WGN.
This is Carolyn Ann Rose, 2018 Miss Classic, and you're on the road with Dane at WGN.
Stop, look, and listen, baby. That's my philosophy.
Yes, it is.
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Skyline Studio high atop Chicago. And on the line with us, there are so many great things going on in the Chicagoland area, and oftentimes some of the most fun ones that we love to share happen out at near Chicagoland Speedway and Route 66 Raceway, and this is no exception. We highlight great car shows and cruise nights all around Chicagoland and America. Specifically, Chicago has a love affair with the automobile, and so many great communities have them where they line the streets, kind of take over the town. And now today, they're taking over Route 66 Raceway with the classic that is happening there. And, you know, what classic would be complete without not only great cars, there's certainly some racing and drag racing and events and food and all sorts of the fun we talked about with Sarah last week, but also a great pinup contest, right, where we've got Miss Classic herself. It's Carolyn Anna Rose. Carolyn, welcome to WGN.
Hi, thank you for having me.
So this is it. So we're in the presence of royalty, right? Because you are there. You are the reigning 2018 Miss Classic. So talk a little bit about the event. I know that it's something that's got a lot of cool elements going on, but the pinup contest is one of those really fun ones as well.
Yeah. So the Route 66 Classic event is just the drag strip's way of just kind of throwing back in time. So when you step through those gates, you should feel like you're going right back to the 60s, the 50s, so forth. So you'll see pinup girls walking around. You'll see all these classic cars from 1979 and older. You're going to see some nostalgic drag racing. We've got funny cars and things like that going on. We've got some elimination racing as well. So we're going to have some vendors as well. We have Hollyville, Molly Ware, Hot Rod Harlot. We have Chicago Pinup Boudoir Photography that's going to be there offering some prizes for the ladies that are in the pinup contest. So you'll see them selling some vintage clothing. There's some, you know, vintage car decals that you can buy there as well. So we have a lot of that going on. There's going to be old-time music, old-time food. There's going to be an old-fashioned tiki bar. So we have a lot of fun stuff for everyone that's coming. So no matter what you're interested in, you're sure to find something to enjoy during the event.
Well, the ambiance is going to be there because you've got not only the cars, obviously that sets the stage for it, but you mentioned the music, you kind of classic music from throughout the decades and kind of bringing people back, but then also a lot of the visuals. And you mentioned like the pinup contest. And so not only do you have people that are able to show up and encourage all the listeners, if they're going to be there, to go ahead and, you know, kind of, I don't know, get into costume, get into kind of the feel for it, but also you've got ways for people to sort of transform on site, right? Like you mentioned, there's people to help with your hair and your makeup and maybe some of the things right there at the fest.
Yeah. So if you know, if you want to bring the little ones out, they can get their hair and makeup done. You can buy clothes there, and you can always wear something. If you want to dress up, you can wear it to the event. There's going to be lots of opportunities to take pictures. I know they had some vintage setups to take pictures in front of. You can take pictures with the classic cars. They have like a red carpet walk full of classic cars. So there's a lot of opportunities there just to get a whole experience, so to speak. So it's just from the visuals to the music, the tastes, everything, it's just hitting all the senses. So you're just being transported right back in time.
So you transported people back in time. You transported yourself. Let's go back to 2018, all the way back, right? When you won, when you became the Miss Classic. So because not only are you going to be there and you've been there all year, we'll talk about some of your official roles as you represent this event, but also you're going to help crown this year's winner.
Yeah, so we get a couple girls. They register early on in the summer, and then we pick some of the top to compete in the contest. They'll come out, they'll get their hair and makeup transformed, they're going to dress up, some of them will bring some props. We'll just have them answer some questions. They go out, they show us their outfits, they put on their best face, they get their stage names out. It's just this whole show to just, you know, bring back the classic attire. They talk in the classic way. It just kind of transports you back to old Hollywood, if you think about it.
Well, okay. It said there, too, there's a Q&A, you know, so this isn't as easy as just kind of capturing the look, which I'm sure is very, very important. But also, you said they talk in the classic way. What does that mean? You know, where they're kind of using some of the lingo from maybe the 50s or 60s?
Yeah, you'll see some girls using some lingo. They'll, you know, talk like they're not in the modern day. So they'll reference stuff in the olden day like it's happening right now.
Like, hey, daddy-o, so, that kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll ask some questions, you know, either about, you know, different pinup idols, how they feel, what pinup means to them. We'll also ask about old Hollywood movies, you know, what their favorite thing is. Just kind of getting a feel for each lady that's up there. And there's going to be two rounds. So the first round is just going to be, you know, their stage presence, how they act on stage, their smile, you know, how they can captivate an audience. And then the second round is going to be the Q&A. So we'll ask a few questions from each ladies, whittle it down to the top. And then from there, we go into the crowning ceremony. And we actually have two titles again this year. So overall, throughout the contest, there is the Miss Classic title. But then we also offer Queen of Hearts title, which goes to whoever earned the most fundraising money for our Pits for Patriots fundraiser.
Wow. Okay, so you mentioned that, too. So much fun. It's going to be a blast. We haven't even gotten into the cars yet, so we talked about that last week. We know there's going to be a bunch. I think it's upwards of close to 500 cars are going to be on site that people are going to love, and not only the drag racing side of it. So all that stuff is there, but it wouldn't be complete either with without a higher purpose, right? And you mentioned Pits for Patriots, so talk about how that works, how it's built into the event, and how people can get more information on this great cause.
So Pits for Patriots, they rescue, rehabilitate, and train pit bulls to be service dogs for service members in the military, police officers, first responders, and things like that. They are a complete non-for-profit, so all they do is work off of what donations they can get. They have a Facebook page and Instagram, so if you want to look them up, you can easily access all that information and donate through there. But during the event, all of the ladies that are participating in the contest will be walking around in the pits to go earn money from anyone that's walking around at the event. So if you see a girl dressed in a pinup dress walking towards you with a jar, give them a couple dollars and you're helping out the Pits for Patriots. They'll even have a booth there as well if you want to go directly to the booth. And they'll be selling some T-shirts and things like that. I know last year they brought some of their dogs out. So you can see some of the service animals as well. You can meet the people that run it. There's also volunteer opportunities as well to work at the booth if you wanted to.
So there's going to be people from all walks of life, all motorsports enthusiasts or maybe enthusiasts of the bygone era and all the excitement that's kind of built into that. And so your official role, you're going to, of course, be the reigning Miss Classic at this. But for the listeners that want to get a little background into what, like, what do you do when you're not Miss Classic, or are you always Miss Classic?
I am always Miss Classic. There's not a day off. So anytime throughout the year, if you go to World of Wheels in Chicago, if you go to Burn Down at Sundown, NHRA, NASCAR, all of those events, if you ever go to the Route 66 booth, you can almost guarantee that I or Tanya, who is the 2017 reigning Miss Classic, will be at the booth dressed in full classic gear, there to talk, give out some information. Sometimes we do giveaways. And we're just kind of there to have fun, take pictures, and just get to know everyone that's at the track and, you know, kind of complete their experience.
Oh, it's great. It's great stuff. And we'll have some pictures up at WGNradio.com as well. And for those people that want to get a hold or at least follow your adventure, certainly they'll be able to see you at the events. They'll be able to see you at the Classic and, of course, some of the other events you mentioned around Chicago and near the track. But if you have social media wise, is there any way that people can kind of keep up with all the things you're doing?
Yeah, so I have both a Facebook and an Instagram page. They're both under Carolyn and Rose Pinups. So if you look me up, I'll be on there. I tend to post information about upcoming events. I post some pictures, you know, of me just in classic gear ready to go. But I tend to post information on giveaways, ticket information, things like that. Or if I'm going to be out and about, sometimes I go with the track to Morris Cruise Night. So I'll post that I'm heading out there. So if you ever want to head over to Morris and go check out their cruise night. Usually I'll be there as well.
Oh, it sounds good. Okay, she's Carolyn Ann Rose, and of course, always also known as the 2018, the reigning Miss Classic, and she will be front and center coming up at the big car show and so many different events. We'll have links up at WGNradio.com. We're going to let you get back to it. Excited for all the things going on, and I know a lot of listeners are going to be excited to see you and meet you as well, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Yes. 720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Skyline studio, high atop Chicago, not quite at flight level, right? But still very high, higher than we were when we used to be at street level on Michigan Avenue. And excited. The entire city is excited. The country's excited, right? And I'm sure he's excited too. The Air and Water Show is happening with, you've got so many great examples of aviation that are happening, and so many people just really looking forward to it and enjoying all of that action in the sky. And this is something that hasn't happened in 11 years as far as the Royal Air Force's Red Arrows being in the United States. And Chicago is the first stop on it. Excited to have squad leader Adam Collins on with us. Adam, welcome to WGN.
Hi, good afternoon. It's great to be here.
Well, it's great to have you. You know, there's so much excitement built around the Air and Water Show. There always is, and you guys have added it and I think taken it to another level with being a part of it here in Chicago this year.
Yeah, as you said, this is the first of our U.S. shows. So we've traveled from the U.K. Our jets are quite small. We can't air to air refuel, so we had to hop all the way from the U.K. through Iceland, Greenland, and Canada. But we've made it to Chicago for our first stop in the U.S., and what a fantastic show to display at. The weather wasn't too kind to us, but we did a good display for the crowd and made the best of the conditions that we had today.
You guys have done things all over the world. You're one of the premier aerobatic jet teams that are out there in 65 countries. So when it comes to Chicago, and what is it as far as kind of the thought process? Because you see them going through in between buildings and over, whether it's the sports stadiums or Wrigley Field or, you know, any of the other places that are around here. Is there kind of a different dynamic, or do you guys have to get together when you're right around a big city with so many tall buildings?
Yeah, absolutely. So we are bound by safety restrictions and regulations, both from the U.S. perspective and from the U.K. So we've had a challenge making sure that we're conforming to both sets of regulations. And our aim really is to put on a very entertaining, very dynamic, memorable show. But above all, it has to be safe. So people will see close passes. They'll see dynamic maneuvers. But it's all very well thought out, very well practiced and designed such that the spectacle is there, but we're keeping both the pilots and the aircraft safe, but more importantly, the people on the ground.
Yeah, and you think about this, so many visuals up there, and it's great to see it. We've got the, you know, Blue Angels and the Golden Knights and, you know, the Thunderbirds, and they all do it. But I've got to say, and this is, you know, I don't know if I'm stepping out of bounds here on the home team side, but the jets that you guys have are so striking. They're beautiful, and I think that really, we've seen some of the pictures. We'll have some at WGNradio.com, but they just look awesome.
Yeah, the Hawk is a classic design. It's a British design from the late 70s. The jets that we fly are actually the original ones that we did fighter pilot training on back in the early 80s. They've not been modified too much. We have a smoke system, obviously, and they're painted bright red. But actually, the new jets that we use at home for pilot training are much more advanced version of the Hawk with a glass cockpit. But for our needs, it's nimble, it's agile. We, of course, can put down red, white, and blue smoke, which gives us the edge in some ways on display flying because we can create those dynamic colors. But it's a wonderful aircraft to fly.
Well, I know the reception has been great. People are excited about it. Sorry we couldn't be there. There was we could have, you and I could have been in a reception at the British consulate to kind of highlight it, and our friends at Hendrix are over there serving up some of the cocktails. And so let's talk a little bit about it from kind of that international relations side. That's part of what it is that you're doing. There's a lot of entertainment, but I think it's one of those things that kind of brings people together too. Do you get questions like that, whether it's from interviews or just it extends beyond just the entertainment side? It really is international relations.
Yeah, absolutely. And sorry, the Blue Angels are displaying behind me, which is the noise you can hear. But yes. Yeah, absolutely. The whole basis of the tour really is developing international relations. So we're here really on behalf of the Department for International Trade from the UK. And as we go around the country, we're going to these great shows, these big events. But we're also conducting flypasts over landmarks, over notable locations around North America. But most importantly, we're engaging with people on the ground. So you mentioned the consulate and engaging at that level, but we're engaging all the way down to school children, students, encouraging people to follow their dreams, to we're hopefully trying to inspire people with our flying and with our engagement on the ground, and really promoting interest in the STEM subjects, science, technology, engineering, and maths, but also with that British slant on it. So encouraging people to invest, to visit, and be educated in Great Britain.
See, that's a lot of responsibility. Let the listeners know we're talking with Squadron Leader Adam Collins for the Royal Air Force's Red Arrows. That's a lot to put on your shoulders because you have so much to do, kind of paying attention, keeping the, you know, your hands at 10 and 2, flying safely, but then to have kind of the, you know, all of these goals internationally kind of built into it, I think is a lot of weight. And of course, you guys are up to it as well. And people are going to enjoy the shows today and tomorrow. It's a 20-minute show. Let the listeners know what they're going to see you guys do when they look up in the sky.
Yeah, so our show, it's about 22 minutes long. We're making it a little longer here. In some shows, we're putting an extra flyby on the end, so around 25 minutes. But really, it's showcasing the excellence of the training and the teamwork in the Royal Air Force and in Great Britain as a whole. So the show really is in two halves. The first half is all nine aircraft in very graceful, large formation aerobatic shapes across the sky, predominantly with white smoke, but using some of the red and blue as well. And then the second half is where we step it up a gear. We split the formation down into two sections, and we've got the dynamic crossing maneuvers, the opposition passes. And it's really as one section goes off stage left, the next section comes on. So there's always something for the crowd to look at. And that's one of the reasons we don't use music in our display. So I know a lot of people asking why we don't use the music. But because the show is so action-packed and rapid-fire, we don't believe it needs it. We're just there to showcase the performance of the aircraft and the skill of the pilots.
Oh, it's great. People are enjoying it, and we talk about great road trips, family road trips all the time, and these are the kind of things that people get in the car, and they go and see. Chicago is the first stop for it, but let the listeners know before we let you go where else they can see you around the country.
So the list is endless. We're going to be in New York, Atlantic City. We're going to be going across various places in the UK. In the U.S., St. Louis. We'll be in Portland, Oregon, Miramar in San Diego, and then ending up at Huntington Beach is our last show. But it's important to remember this road trip we're doing, this trip across the States, we have 108 people here. So there's 11 pilots, 9 of whom fly in the display, but then we've got nearly 100 support personnel, engineers, administration, logisticians, and everything in between. So it's important to remember it is a real team effort.
Wow, it's a great undertaking, and I know that you're enjoying seeing the country just as much as everybody's enjoying watching what it is that you guys do. We'll have a link up, but if you have, do you have like a website or a place where people can go social media-wise to keep up with the adventures as you kind of go on with the tour?
Absolutely. So if you go on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, or just look up RAF Red Arrows online, you'll get to our website, you'll get to our Twitter feed, and we're using the Twitter extensively to put photos on there. So any of the just get it on the search engine, get in there, and you'll see all the photos. I fly with the team photographer in my back seat when I'm flying, so we're trying to bring you some spectacular views over these landmarks in some vantage points that you wouldn't normally see them from.
Oh, it's awesome. Squad leader Adam Collins, he is with the Royal Air Force's Red Arrows. They are here today and tomorrow and across the country, it looks like, the rest of the summer. Thanks so much for what you're doing. Thanks for coming to Chicago. Thanks for jumping on the show today.
That's a pleasure. We've been made to feel really welcome, so it's an absolute pleasure to be here.
All right. Enjoy. All right. Thank you, sir. And we are going to take a quick break. When we come, you got great jets that are flying overhead all over the place here in Chicago. Then you got great cars that are parked along the streets in Westmont, right? It's full scope, 360. We're going to talk with Larry McIntyre from Westmont for their cruise nights when we come back. Quick break on the road with Dane, 720 WGN.
Thanks, Seattle.
My daddy said, son, you're going to drive me to drinking if you don't stop driving that hot rod Lincoln.
Hey, everybody. Danny the Count Coker here from Counting Cars and Count 77. You are on the road with Dane. Come on, people, turn it up.
Have you heard the story of the hot rod
720 WGN on the road with Dane live here, Skyline Studio. Hi, atop Chicago. For those people who missed out on the last bit of Lou Manfredini's commercial, he said his cholesterol is normal. And so that's good to know, right? That's what we're good to know. So here's the thing is, there's a lot of action going on there with the car things. People that have heard the classic that's happening down at Route 66, 500 cars there. But when you can put one of these shows on and have a great place for either car clubs or car enthusiasts, have great themes to them, and then have it happen in the city, on the streets on a regular basis, and so well attended, supported, beloved, not only by the community, but a lot of people from communities all around Chicagoland. You know you're doing a bunch of things right, and that's what they're doing in Westmont. A guy that helps kind of wrangle a lot of it and so many of the cool things that are happening in Westmont is Larry McIntyre. Larry, welcome to WGN.
Dane, thanks so much for having us on.
No, it's always great to have you guys on, and I know as we're kind of getting towards the end of sort of the I guess would be the cruise night season, if you will. You've got a couple big ones coming up, and I know you're going to share some other things as well. But let's talk about how the season has gone so far. It's been a great one.
Yeah, this is an event that has been going on for 20 years, but probably in the last 5-6 years, it has really gone by leaps and bounds. At that time, the village board kind of got behind what we were doing and allowed us to shut down the streets in downtown Westmont. That's on Cass Avenue. And so every Thursday night from 5 to 9 p.m., June, July, and August, we closed down 3 blocks of downtown Westmont. And then all of that parking space is reserved for classic cars and cool cars. We don't just kind of leave it to classic cars. We also, you know, allow people to come in with really expensive cars that people put a lot of work into. It's more about the show and the fun of coming down and really loving cars. And then in addition, you know, we call it the Cruising Nights and Street Fair because we bring in a lot more family-friendly type events and different attractions to really make it fun for the whole family and the whole community.
One of the things that is really cool, and I kind of touched on it during the intro, is that, you know, the community and the city, and you mentioned it as well, is participating, is really behind it. And you don't always see that. You can see some cruise nights or car shows that are pretty well attended and very popular, but you don't always have the city on board for it or the local merchants. You know, sometimes as crazy as it sounds, you think a crowd would be great, but sometimes all of those cars, they see it as kind of impeding their business. But here, I think it's a great way to not only, you said you bring it to the fair and there's a bunch of extra vendors there and some other things going on, but also the restaurant community. It seems like they're kind of involved and supportive as well, and I think it brings in a lot of new people.
I completely agree. It's a very much a festival atmosphere. And when we closed down the streets, we also made a decision working with the local restaurants and bars and things to allow alcohol on the street. And so during the event, people can go to a local business, get a wristband, and then purchase a beverage and then walk throughout the event. And so that really makes it a really nice festival type of environment, and people really enjoy that.
Yeah. Okay, and so here's the themes. Now, I was part of and got to participate in kind of the police night that you guys have there, where you have, you know, not only, you know, Westmont represented, and of course they've got some very nice police cars. You don't want to be inside of them. So you want to see them from the outside the way that we were able to do it. But you had a lot of communities there that brought them out and were kind of showcasing what it is that they do. And they had, it was really well attended. People love that stuff.
Yeah, we have people come from throughout Illinois, and we've had people come as far from Virginia. I think that's the furthest a squad car has ever traveled to come to the event. And but we ended up with over 60 squad cars from probably about 50 plus communities coming to that event, and that is always one of the first weeks in June. And then we thank you for coming out because you helped us judge the contest, and then there was an additional, we're always doing some sort of a fundraiser or additional special activity within the event, and that particular event we also had a Make-A-Wish granted that evening, and so we appreciate you being involved.
Yeah, it was great. Now, I don't want to, and of course, we're just talking amongst ourselves here. I'm sure no one's actually listening, and especially not your nefarious, like, criminal types. But did you ever hear that you know, that maybe crime upticked in some of these communities where maybe the bad guys had heard that some of the police presence would be in Westmont and, you know, in all these other places that were unattended? Did that ever happen?
I would not care to comment on that. I I've never heard anything like that. But
sure.
But I know. I'll say this for sure. With all those squad cars and all those law enforcement officers in Westmont, we can be certain that our town is extra safe that night.
Yeah, the crime rate in Westmont went way down. Not that it's ever. There's almost no crime there. We know that. So let's talk about the couple nights that are coming up. Here's one of the things that's really cool. Encourage people to check it out. Go on the website. We'll have links as well. But you guys always have kind of a theme, you know, not that it isn't, you know, open and accommodating for all different kinds of cars on a regular basis, but you kind of throw out sort of a theme there to kind of inspire people from either whether it's particular kind of cars or years or whatever to get involved in and kind of highlight and showcase those for that week.
Absolutely. And as you said, every car is welcome every week. So we invite everybody out to come out every week. But then we have these themes just to kind of, as you said, inspire folks to come out if you have a specific make or model. And this upcoming week is Motorcycle Night. We always do this after the Sturgis event is over. And this is usually one of the biggest nights we have. So we'll probably have 60-plus motorcycles and then 200 cars and probably more than that, actually. We've been averaging about 275, 300 vehicles each week as long as we have decent weather. And so that's what's coming up. And then also for this upcoming Thursday is our military night. So people will bring out Jeeps. And we've never had a tank. I don't know if you have any connections to get a tank out there. That's always been one of my my dreams. But yeah, we have people come out and bring military vehicles. And that's also a night that we also salute our veterans.
Oh, it's great. I don't know. I don't know anyone has. Ashley, you got any tank connections? Anybody got a tank? Your friends of yours have a tank? Occasionally you'll see them. No?
I got nothing, man.
No tanks?
No tanks.
Any shoulder-mounted missile launchers? No, nothing like
I'll
that?
I'll keep an eye out.
All right. Okay, so here's the thing, and this is part of it, and if you can describe too, Larry, your capacity within Westmont is you're part of kind of the fun zone where you are involved with all of those great events, and Westmont does a ton of great stuff. You know, they, whether it's the red, white, and barbecue contest that you guys do, which is one of the top ones in the Midwest, probably one of the better ones or more respected ones in the country. You guys do that. You guys have a bunch of different things going on. You got the you guys are always having fun. You got the kind of the pub crawl. I know we talked to you. Anything else, Hen, coming up in Westmont that you want to share with people before we let you go?
Absolutely. And it's worth mentioning that I belong to a volunteer organization called Westmont Special Events. This year's our 15th anniversary, and it's a not-for-profit that is specifically designed to put on community events. And so everything's run by volunteers, and so that's great. We also have other organizations in town that do great events, including our Westmont Lions Club, our Westmont Rotary Club, and others. And we all work together to make sure that we're providing events all year long that provide fun for the family. So coming up in October, September is a little bit of a slower month for us because we need a break after the summer. But then in October, the entire month of October, we brand as Wicked West Fest. And you can get information on westmontevents.com. But that's a full month of activities surrounding the Halloween holidays. And then a month after that, starting just before Thanksgiving and continuing all the way through the end of December, we have another festival called Holly Days. And that has a whole month of events as well. We have different pub crawls. Our Red, White, and Barbecue, as you mentioned, is hosted by our Lions Club. And that's an award-winning event. It's probably the biggest judged event in the Midwest and sanctioned by the Kansas City Barbecue Society. And so there's a lot of there's a lot going on. And so we invite anyone to come out to Westmont and enjoy what we're doing. But westmontevents.com, that's the place to get all the info.
Yep, 312-981-7200. People are hearing this. You got to make your way to Westmont. If you got a community event that you want to share in your town as well, you can definitely do that. And but you guys do it. You guys are really super active, and I think it's a great example for a lot of places. And I'm sure you get people not only from Westmont, but you get people from all over the Midwest that come and enjoy the things you're doing. So kudos to you, Larry. Good to let you get back to your weekend, but thanks for jumping on the show today.
All right, thanks so much.
All right, and I want to tell you, too, is that I think Lombard's got a couple extra days. They do their Saturday thing, so if you want to get out to Lombard, their cruise night in the Main Street area, I think, is happening. It depends on the weather, right, Ashley? Because if you had a very fancy car, you wouldn't want it to get wet, and so I think it really does impact it. If it starts to rain, those the attendance for those events go down.
Yeah, it does go south really quick. But it's super fun to get out there, get to see some new cars. It's always interesting when you see some of the weird-looking cars that are super old school. Well, I don't mean in like a bad
like
way.
Like a ZZ Top kind of era.
Yeah,
like
they have, they're like, have like interesting wheels or like a really cool hood. It's like very interesting to see the different makes and models of all the cars throughout the years. And even like the fun ones are like the Ghostbuster cars that you sometimes randomly run into, or like the Batmobile.
Back to the Future.
Yeah, the Back to the Future car. You know, you see some cool ones out there. It's always fun to see what you can find. It's like a treasure hunt.
I guess it is. Yeah, well, people are going to find some of their favorite, well, all of their favorite drivers in the Monster Energy Cup Series are racing tonight. It is the night race at Bristol Motor Speedway. And when we come back, we're going to send it to break, and then we're going to come back and send the news. And after that, we've got Ricky Craven from that great Fox team and, of course, acclaimed driver as well. He'll be joining us to talk a little bit about that. So quick break, and we'll come back with more. It's On the Road with Dane here on 720 WGN.
Hi, folks. This is Darryl Waltrip, a NASCAR analyst on Fox, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
Well, I left Kentucky back in 49 and went to Detroit working on assembly line. The first year they had me putting wheels on Cadillac.
720 WGN, on the road with Dane, high atop Chicagoland in the Skyline studio, and this is the kind of thing, you know, one of the, and we'll say it all the time, is that as far as racing goes, sometimes the tracks are as big as stars as the drivers themselves, and tonight is the Bristol Night Race, and we wanted to get somebody on that could talk a little bit about some of this, and excited to have, honored to have with him. You know him as an Xfinity Series champion, Rookie of the Year in the Monster Energy Cup, longtime great analyst over there at ESPN, and now part of that incredible Fox NASCAR team. It is the one and only Ricky Craven. Ricky, welcome to WGN.
Dane, thank you.
So this is kind of a big night, you know, because this is one of those things, and we mentioned a little bit in the intro, is that the tracks are as big as stars, and outside of maybe Daytona or maybe Indianapolis, right? You know, it's Bristol is one of those places that not only fans love, that I think it's great for TV, the visuals are great, but the drivers are so excited about it too.
You know, forever, the Big Four would be considered Daytona 500, the Coke 600, the Southern 500, and then the Brickyard 400, and that's just by generally speaking, by measure, and from the fans and the drivers and the owners and the sponsors. And but in the last couple decades, Bristol has become among the most significant races, the Bristol Night Race, of all drivers, and it's like this is the next generation's driver's favorite race. It's Saturday night under the light and extreme action.
You know the action is there, and they're going to be bumping, and it's the kind of visuals, right? You can see everything going on. It's all laid out in front of you. But, Ricky, you mentioned it, and is it kind of, and this is a sport that needs to constantly do it on an individual basis from the track's marketing. You look at Darlington, the way that they've sort of kind of branded that throwback weekend, and then you've got Bristol. Is it just that they've been so great? Not only is it a fun time, and I think it's, you know, there's a lot on the line and fans love it, but have they just been great at kind of marketing the experience at Bristol?
Yeah, they certainly have, Dane. It's an atmosphere that is like no other. It's late in the summer. Kids are getting ready to go back to school. It might be the last trip the family makes. The camping's phenomenal in the mountains of Tennessee, and the race because it's so crazy fast, 14, 15 second laps. The race itself is unpredictable, very volatile, and drivers don't have time to regain the composure when if they get bumped or they feel like they got moved out of the way, moved up the racetrack. A lot of retaliation, and I think that it's Saturday night, right? And you know, you stay up late and sleep in tomorrow. Drivers even feel that way.
Now, the drivers on the strategy side, you know, it's different than almost any other place, right? Because there is so much kind of bumping and grinding, and you mentioned tempers flare, and so there's a lot of things that you can't necessarily plan for in advance. But as a driver who's been there doing it, like, what is kind of is the strategy just to kind of, like, survive and be there at the end? How does it work?
Yeah, I think back to when I raced in this event, and being under the lights, you think, you know, there would be some dynamic of, you know, maybe a little more difficult to see your perception or peripheral vision. But because of the concrete and how well lit it is, I remember competing there in this event and thinking, you really don't know the difference between day and night. It's almost illuminated. But it's a long day, and I will say that even though, you know, you think, well, the drivers could sleep in or what, it doesn't work that way. You know, drivers stay, they live at every racetrack. Each week their bus goes from track to track, and it's very difficult to sleep in at a racetrack. So by 8 o'clock when the race starts, it makes for a long day. And as I said a moment ago, retaliating at Bristol is almost like a common reaction, and you don't see that at Talladega, you don't see it at Daytona, the big tracks, but you certainly see it at the half mile track of Bristol.
Well, here's the other side of it, too, is just everything is so compact. You mentioned tempers, kind of flares. There's no real way to get away and kind of decompress or escape. And everything, if you look at those aerial photos, everything is so jammed up. I think a little bit later on in the show, we're going to have Doug Bowles, president of Indianapolis Motor Speedway. And they've got, I think, 270 acres in the infield, some holes of golf, a dirt track. They got all the room in the world. But talk a little bit about how everything is just so kind of condensed. The fans are on you, but you guys are jam-packed in the middle there.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, it's just a completely different environment. You feel contained. There's very little margin for error. I could try to take you from a visual perspective around the track, but imagine you're full throttle running down into the corner, and you lift off the gas and apply the brakes almost at the same exact time. You're synchronized or doing that twice a lap for 500 laps, so 1,000 times. When you slam into the banking, you feel like you're going down through the bottom of the race car. The compression is enormous, more than any other track that we compete at. And when you feel that compression and the lateral force, the loads against you, you know you have to go back to the accelerator. And you squeeze that accelerator down, and you just wonder, am I going to make it off the corner without slamming the wall? You're measuring yourself to the wall. You release the wheel. You're spinning the rear tires. And you only have about a second and a half where you have the wheel straight. And then you're heading into turn three and doing it all over again. Now, that's all by yourself, Dane. Imagine putting 39 other cars around you.
Right.
And the risk that are involved with that.
Oh, it's everything is happening, but it is one of those. It's a high profile event. And of course, everything's on the line as we get towards kind of the edge of the season where people are starting to kind of look where they are in contention for the playoffs. What are your thoughts? Having been, and we'll talk a little bit about the transition to Fox, how it's been. You've been doing an amazing job all year, but so who do you like, I guess, really? Who has a chance or who needs it, right? And what do you think you'll see?
So the drivers with the most experience and the drivers you'd think are best equipped for this would be Clint Bowyer, Jimmy Johnson, right on the bubble, just barely in, just barely out. Ryan Newman is in the hunt, and you know, he has that same level of experience. But I think that they have a different degree of pressure because the world expects them to advance, and they, you know, great teams, great organizations. I'm looking at Daniel Suarez. In fact, I said it on Fox week after week. Daniel Suarez, I think, has the wind to his back because he really has. He's never won a race, a cup race, and by all measure, it would be an upset for him to do this. He's been running better than any of the other drivers that are on the bubble in the last few weeks, and I think he's poised for an upset.
So Daniel Suarez, that's great. Well, he's got, you know, some great equipment now with Stuart Haas, and so he's in there. I wanted to ask you a little bit, and this is a guy that's maybe got a chip on his shoulder, you know, winded his back maybe just from an inspirational, motivational kind of situation, is Matt DiBenedetto. And this is a guy,
yeah,
you always
right.
love those stories when you see somebody that's, you know, got the talent, they get in there, they get some decent equipment. Decent is really all I'm saying. It could be better, but he's really come to shine, and he qualify seventh, I think, for tonight?
Yeah. And Dane, he's a great story. He's a great story. Unfortunately, the story maybe had a surprise chapter this week, and the team announced that Matt wouldn't be invited back, that they were going to make a driver change. He's shown steady progress. He's been very encouraging the last 6 weeks, run better than he ever has in his career, and it might be a stretch to say that he could win in the next few weeks, but he has had top five finishes, and he's among the most positive people I've ever been around. He's very, very enthusiastic about his opportunities, and hopefully he lands on his feet off season. But you know, he's got 13 races left this year to continue to to impress people.
Kind of make that statement. He's great on social media. He's super active there. Like you said, he's got top fives, top tens. I think he led the most laps in the Daytona 500. So from the talent side, he's proven that he can do it. And like you said, too, it's a great story. And you hope that he, you know, can get out there and you know, kind of maybe this is a, you know, one door closing and another one, maybe even a better one opening. So we're going to definitely be pulling for him. I think he's got a lot of fans there. So here's the other side of it, too. We wanted to ask you is how's it been, you know, the transition to Fox? It's been great. You know, seeing your work all year long there. And of course, you've got a lot of that great equipment, part of that amazing team. And so does it feel comfortable? You feel like you're fully Fox now, right?
Yeah, I enjoy it. It's I have fun with people I'm close to that ask me the same question. I say, you know, I'm 53 years old, and making the transition to Fox has rewarded me in a number of ways. One of them, I'm able to drive to work. For the first time in my life, I'm able to drive to work. I've been getting on an airplane my entire adult life. And, of course, with ESPN, I had to fly to Connecticut every weekend. This has been great. And, you know, I really enjoy the team. I'm comfortable with all of the people because I've had a connection with them in the garage area for years. And there's a load of talent that back us up at the studio.
Yeah, you mentioned the talent there. 11 years at ESPN, and now over there with Fox. You're on. Yeah, what I think is it's kind of like the Yankees when it comes to, you know, the motorsports coverage and a lot of the things that they do. So congratulations there. You mentioned the car. I wanted to ask you about this. You're driving to work now. You used to take a plane, and for the listeners out there that may not be super familiar, you know, this is for NASCAR. Everybody travels to whatever location. Every single, you know, kind of personality in the series and the multiple series travel every week to wherever it is that they're doing it. And a lot of it happens on planes. A lot of it's on some of the smaller planes, the private jets and things like that. What was your thought? And I'm sure you've spent a lot of time on those kinds of planes as well with Dale Jr. landing there. At first, when they first said, hey, you know, they overshot the runway and everybody's fine and no injuries at all, you thought it was no big deal. You look at that video and wow.
Yeah, it made me sick to my stomach. I really couldn't believe the headline. And I had somebody text me the headline rather than call me. So when I saw that headline, it made me sick to my stomach. Dale Jr. and his family involved in a plane crash, but it's what a blessing for it to have turned out the way it did. It's just the odds are ridiculous. You know, just hard to imagine. And I think, you know, there's got to be some trauma for Dale and his wife, the pilots. You know, I can't even describe to you the number of people and the number of aircraft that are in the air because of our industry.
Yep.
How dependent we are getting from point A to point B, and honestly, how you take it for granted. I guess you always look at the weather, because if you fly as much as we do, you always get yourself in a storm. You're eventually going to get yourself in a storm that you just kind of pray you can get out of. But that's really it. You know, I don't think much. I guess you know the risks with taking off and landing, but when you're flying, you're always doing other things. You're always catching up. You're using that time, because it's very peaceful in the air, to catch up on some extra work and notes and research. But you don't think about these scenarios, but then they become reminders that, you know, anytime you're dependent on mechanical equipment, there's risk.
Yeah, and especially with the smaller airports that a lot of the private jets and those smaller aircraft go to, it's not like you have like a full-blown, you know, fire department ready to do. They didn't have any kind of distress call in the beginning. And I think as drivers, you guys, you know, you kind of accept, and I think we as fans and people who cover the sport accept there's an inherent risk that you could, you know, get in an accident and bad things could happen, you know, from a car crash. But you don't necessarily factor in, you know, the whole family and the dog and the kid and the thing. And so, and right, if I was him, I'd almost want to do the whole John Madden thing. Remember, he used to always take the tour bus, the Madden Cruiser, because you know what? It just seems crazy.
Dan, you know, you make an excellent point that as a race car driver, you associate the risks associated with your profession and you accept them. You know, you're going 200 miles an hour. You're running up against a wall. There's, you know, there's so many scenarios that that you expose yourself to. But you do take the aircraft and the flying for granted. I'll say this, that I owned a plane. I leased a plane. I leased a plane similar to what Dale Jr. had the situation this past week. And, you know, you're dependent on the professional sitting up front. The one thing that I think maybe is a little more at risk with private aircraft is that sometimes you do slide in and out of airports. Like in this case, I think it was 4,500 feet. There's not a lot of room for error there. That, you know, like I grew up in Maine, and a lot of times when I flew back to Maine, I had a summer home there. We would fly into Bangor, and I think that airport was like a half mile long. I'm sorry, it was like 3 miles long, and it was just an enormous international airport there. But when you're flying out in and out of racetracks, or you try to get as close to the track as you can, sometimes those runways are short, relatively speaking.
Yeah, it's the kind of thing, it's just the nature of the business, like you mentioned, just having everybody kind of have to kind of mobilize and get where they're going. And you talked about, you know, all of those planes that are involved in the sport of racing and how they're constantly flying week in and week out. So I wanted to ask you before we let you go, you're going to, like, how are you going to be enjoying the race tonight? Do you sit there? Do you have sort of a command center, you know, where you're maybe doing some social media, just, you know, do you make some popcorn and kind of, are you tailgating? What are you going to do? What does a Ricky Craven do to enjoy Bristol Night Race?
So, as you know, NBC took over midway through the year in July, and I don't have the heavy lifting that I would normally have. So I'm going to watch this race from the comfort of home, more like from a fan's perspective.
Yeah.
And I can't rule out having a big bowl of popcorn or maybe even a cold beer, but I'm going to enjoy the race. This is a fun race to watch. I can tell you that it wasn't always the most fun to compete in. There were a number of times where I was whistling along thinking, this is my night, this is my night, and a wreck happens on the front stretch, and you try to slow down and get wiped out on the back stretch. Like, there's so many ways to lose a race at Bristol just because of all the things we described earlier. It is such a congested form of racing.
Yeah, it's going to be a blast. Whoever's going to win, we're going to see that. I think the fans and you, Ricky Craven, us, of course, and all of our listeners are winners to be able to sit back, relax, and enjoy it on television tonight. And so where can people catch up with you? I know on the social media side, if you want to give out some of that so people can keep up with your adventures as you're kind of going through, you know, all of your observations on the racing side.
Yeah, my Twitter account, and I know it's crazy. I got, I think, 50,000 followers, but I don't even remember my Twitter account. I mean, I think it's just freaking crazy.
That's pretty nice.
But anyway,
we'll have a link.
Yeah. Yeah. So I enjoy reading the social media probably more than I enjoy participating in it because I think it adds an element to watching the race or watching any event that it just gives it a whole nother element, right? It's pretty cool. And the fact that fans can weigh in.
Yeah, it's great stuff, and so much great stuff is happening over there on Fox with Race Hub and Ricky Craven. You are a great addition to that Fox team, and so excited to have you on to talk a little bit about racing in general, Bristol in general, and, of course, some of the dynamics that happen in and around the racing world. So we're going to let you get back to it, get the popcorn popping, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Dane, have a great weekend. I look forward to the next time we can connect.
All right. Thanks. So Ricky Craven, and of course, he's going to be watching along with us. We're going to take a quick break. Then we're going to take another quick break. Then we're going to send it to News on the Road, 720 WGN.
Hi, this is Gary Granton from Stallions Gate, Mustang and Ford Club, and you're on the road with Dane at WGN.
Mustang Sally. Guess you better slow your
720 WGN on the road with Dane, live here in the Skyline Studio High atop Chicago. And you look out on the roads and you've got so many great cars, so many great cruises, so many great cruise nights, and so many communities that have lots of great cars all over the place. When you think of the team photo, maybe the Mount Rushmore when it comes to classic cars, maybe muscle cars, maybe some of those cars that people love. And the Ford Mustang is definitely one of those that's up there. It is one of the superstars of the classic car world. And excited to have on the line a guy that not only has great cars, but a great club to go along with it. He's part of the Stallions Gate Mustang and Ford Club. We've got a big event coming up on September 14. It's Gary Granson. Gary, welcome to WGN.
Hey, Dane.
I know we've got an event coming up, but you've had a lot of events, and one of those is, of course, your connection with Mustang and with the club. Talk about you personally. Like, what was it? Was it when you were a kid, you first saw one, and you were like, oh my gosh, I got to have one of those? Or how did it start with you?
Well, as a matter of fact, when I was in high school, you know, a lot of those cars back in the mid-60s and 70s were all really popular. And my dad was always a Ford man, and I guess I kind of related to that, too. But I ended up buying a 65 Mustang.
Wow.
It was a coupe. I had it for a handful of years. It needed a ton of work. But shortly after that, my wife and I were going to get married, and we're trying to save money to buy a house and everything. So we ended up selling the car. But before I sold it, my dad bought one in 73. And so we took some of the parts off my car, which I was going to sell. And that's the car I are currently driving today, 65 red Mustang convertible. It's a K code. It's actually a fairly rare car, but it's been in our family since 73.
Wow.
My dad and I helped rebuild quite a bit of it over the course of those years.
Yeah, so that's neat, right? You have that connection, the family connection. You get to build the car, you get to love the car, and you're lucky, too. You know, there's a lot of pressures on relationships out there. We all know about the statistics. And did it happen, Gary, where, you know, you have to, you know, sell the car in order to go ahead and start this new life together with your wonderful wife? Was there any resentments? You know, were there times during an argument where you felt like, hey, you made me sell the Mustang?
No, not at all, because the Mustang really needs a lot of work, and the focus was actually, you know, starting our life and saving money to get a house and continue on with that. But I think a lot of that fell off and rubbed off on my dad, and that's when he bought his car.
Oh, that's nice. And then you guys got together and you built the car. Now, let's talk a little bit about the club, because there is one thing that I think is a common thread with motorsports enthusiasts, and we always say there's a love affair with the automobile. And part of it, even for people who don't have the cars, you know, you see this, you know, streets in the communities, the car shows and the cruise night, not everybody, in fact, probably most of the people don't have a great car, but they love to kind of walk down and kind of talk with some of the people who have them, kind of get some of that backstory, not only on the origins, but also the connections with the cars and what's on it and what's not, and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And so with the club, talk about the Stallions Gate Mustang and Ford Club. Like, you guys got together, and I'm sure, you know, there's a lot of people with a lot of great cars.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, Stallions Gate Mustang and Ford Club started back in 1993, and I didn't join the club till 2000, but it's actually all Fords and Mustangs, and currently, right now, we're based out of the Palatine area, but we have club members that come out as far as outside of Rockford, down to Aurora, up to Gurnee, and like every place in between. We have about 90 members. We meet once a month, like on the second Saturday, and we go to different venues, different restaurants, and then we have a lot of activities too. And we have all ranges of cars from the 64 all the way up to 2018s. So
now, I mean, if you like Mustangs and you're a supporter of that, and obviously the Ford Club as well, so there's a lot of different cars in there. But do you guys have, because you know what, some of the current Mustangs are really great. Some of them are very cool. They may not have sort of that classic iconic status, but you've got some of those like Shelby Cobras, and there's some really cool cars in there that aren't necessarily sort of in the vintage category. Where do you guys come down on that?
Yeah, well, you know, we have all makes and models when it comes down to that. And it's, as a matter of fact, our club president has a California Special, which is it's a beautiful car. I think it's a 2013, I think. I don't know. But it's just a gorgeous car. And we have everything in between. And we're all car enthusiasts. And whether they're the old in the 60s and 70s, we have cars from almost every era of all of the Mustangs. And these guys just love cars and love the crews. And it's a real tight-knit group, so we do a lot of stuff together. We have a lot of events all during the course of the entire year. We meet 12 months out of the year.
Well, you get together, and I'm sure the membership you mentioned based in Palatine is where you typically meet, but I'm sure the guys come from, and girls, right, come from all over sort of the Chicagoland area, right? I'm sure that they live in different places, but you guys are converging. You're bringing it all together to have the entire club together for a great show that's happening out at Hopkins Ford in Elgin on September 14. Talk a little bit about the event that's coming up.
Yeah, that's September 14th. It's a Saturday. It's got at Hopkins Ford, which is over there in Elgin. It's right off 19, I think, out there. It's called Chicago Avenue. And it's from 9 till 3. Gates open up at 8. Usually there's guys waiting there by the time we set up. And there's a modest $20 gate fee, but that includes a $5 raffle prize. We have a grand prize, so everybody gets into that raffle. But the main thing is that 100% of these donations that come in go to Operation Support Our Troops, which we have, as a matter of fact, over the last couple of years at the end of the show, which we generate between 125 cars, so hopefully more this year. But we've generated and written them a check for between $2,000 and $3,000 every year, and that goes directly to them. So the club doesn't gain any of this other than who we're trying to sponsor.
Well, but what's great about it, though, is that you're putting not only, you know, because a lot of this is a personal situation. You get to enjoy the car. It's, you know, something you have a passion for, the entire club does. But to be able to put kind of all that energy towards a kind of a higher purpose with the cause, especially supporting our men and women in uniform, I think is great.
Yeah, yeah. So it's worked out really well. And we have a number of some Vietnam vets in our club, as well as from Desert Storm and a few of the other conflicts and wars that we've been going through. So we're pretty strong when it comes down to supporting our military.
September 14th out of Hopkins Ford in Elgin. And you know the cars are going to be there. You know that Gary is going to be there, as well as all those other enthusiasts. What other kind of things for people that that aren't necessarily part of the club but want to come out and see the cars? What else is going on?
Well, we're going to have raffles. We have a 50-50 drawing. We have food vendors. We're going to have music. And we have, I think there's going to be a silent auction. And there's just literally just walking around and just chatting with all the guys that tell the stories about their cars. And it's really been successful. This is, I believe, the fourth year that we're having it. So it's our fourth annual. And every year it's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. I mean, there's a lot of, I think we picked September because it's getting kind of near the end of the cruise season, and because everybody likes to do it during the summer. But hopefully this will work out really well for us. So obviously we invite everybody to come out.
Oh, I'm sure it's gonna be great. September 14th, Hopkins Ford in Elgin. We'll have links up at WGNRadio.com. Gary Granson is there with us. And so last thing, and of course, if you've got a website or social media or other places, maybe a Facebook page for the club where people can check out more information and kind of make their plans to come out and see you.
Yeah. We're definitely on Facebook. It's Stallions Gate. We've got a Facebook page that we post a lot of events and pictures and blogs and all that kind of stuff. And then we have our website, stallionsgate.org. That's all one word, stallionsgate.org. And we have our calendar. We have our 12-month calendar out there, which includes we have chili cook-offs and St. Patrick's Day parades and Mother's Day honors and Memorial Day and 4th of July parade and National Night Out. I mean, the list goes on and on and on. Oh. So we're extremely active club.
That's great. And so even for the people that are hearing this that maybe have a Mustang, love Mustangs or Fords in general and want to be a part of the club, is there information, unless it's a closed, you know, kind of club, or is there a way for people to get involved and join up with you? It sounds like fun.
Oh, it's definitely open. Off the website, we can you can do that. You can show up at one of our meetings. We'll have applications for membership at the car shows. We go to cruise nights. I mean, so it's literally open to everybody. And it's a modest $25 charge registration. That's an active membership. And that's primarily to support all the, our insurance and our social media and our website. That kind of just covers our costs. That's all it does. So that's why at this Hopkins Ford show, all those dollars go directly to Operation Support Our Troops.
That's some great cars. Of course, the Mustang is a great car, and if you're part of that club, you're seeing them on a regular basis. Stallions Gate Mustang and Ford Club, and again, coming up September 14th out at Hopkins Ford. So thanks, Gary. Thanks for what you're doing. Not only sharing it, I'm sure all the Mustang fans out there are excited to hear from you. They're excited to see you in September, and thanks for jumping on the show today.
Hey, Dane, thanks so much for you, and hope to see everybody out there on the 14th.
Hey, this is Guy Goody from Diners, Drivers, and Dives, and you are on the road with Dane on WGN. Put your seatbelt on. We're on the road.
I like to dream. Yes, right between the sound machine.
720 WGN on the road with Dane. High atop Chicago Skyline Studio. We are here for a handful of minutes, and we got a chance to talk with Ricky Craven. Of course, it's on the news all over the place. It was a plane crash, I guess, right? The plane did crash. It blew up and was on fire and everything, but it did actually sort of land. It looks like it. They said it had a bumpy landing. It bounced a couple times, then the landing gear broke, and then they skidded off the runway and ended up on a highway, actually. And so when they first had said and of course, Ricky had mentioned that the headline was, they're in a plane crash. Typically, people don't walk away from plane crashes. And so that's, I think, ominous. And that's, I don't say it's irresponsible, but it did kind of paint it with a picture. But when you found out that everybody walked away and there was no injuries, then you think to yourself, well, it must have just been, and Ashley, you and I were talking a little bit about it off the air, that, one of those where it just went off the runway, the brakes went out and it was landed in some foam or a big net or something like that, and everybody was kind of fine. But when you look at the video, and this is one of those smaller airports, those executive airports, and I've actually flown on one of those same type of aircraft, and a lot of those airports, there just isn't the same kind of infrastructure on the emergency kind of response side that you would see. And when you see that video of the thing kind of almost on its side and on fire and exploding, and they got out just a few seconds beforehand, it was really close to, like, if the plane is twisted a little bit more where the door doesn't open, or it went through a chain link fence that was wrapped around the fuselage, if it would have blocked that door, there is no one there to help them at all. They ended up jumping out themselves, handing the baby through the door, pulling the dog out. Yeah, they would have died, inside of a minute or so. I mean, there was a lot of flames. It was crazy.
Yeah, when you really look at the footage that they have all over the place, if you really watch it, it happens so fast. Like, 1 minute you see the plane, it's on, it's got smoke, and the next you see there's fire, there's people leaving the plane, you see the dog run out, you see the baby being handed out. And it's just, it really does happen so fast, and it makes you really think, like, wow, if they would have waited 1 second too late, or like you said, if the chain link fence went around the door and they couldn't get out, it's just, they got lucky, and, it really is a blessing that they all made it out and everyone's okay, and they're really taking a deeper dive into looking into the investigation of what really went.
What happened? Yeah. Because, and they had said, because some people had come out and said it's unlikely that it was a pilot error. It's probably something mechanical that happened within the plane. Ended up going through the chain. I don't know what kind of chain link fence will stop a plane of any size, right? And of course, it didn't. Maybe it's just to keep people from trespassing, I guess. But it ended up coming to rest on a highway. And the highway people there, whether it's the state troopers or the whatever their highway department, mentioned that that's a very, very busy highway. And so it could have happened where they jump out and get hit by cars, or the plane itself gets hit by cars, or the plane lands or runs into like a truck or something like that. It really does make you think that. And John Madden, a longtime coach and broadcasting personality, and he was, there's a lot of people that aren't really comfortable with flying. And I think maybe it's more about the sensation of it, maybe that makes them feel uneasy, or maybe they're kind of just extrapolating the potential danger. They always say flying in a plane is the safest way to travel, and I'm sure that it is statistically, but it's the kind of thing you can get in an accident in a car and walk away, whereas if your plane crashes, typically everybody dies.
In most cases, right. And this was one of those rare cases where it just kind of all happened at once on land, where you wonder if it were something that happened up in the air, which I believe in some articles it said that it had something to do with possibly a landing gear or something.
Yep.
Just happened off. But it was like they got lucky that, one, the plane stopped. It didn't just keep rolling and keep going, and they had the opportunity to get out. And two, it was like you never know. You just see the flames and the pictures later on where you see after it's
you
been
said a
put
minute,
out,
Ashley. It crashed and it was on fire. There was an explosion, and then it was maybe 10 seconds, 20 seconds, then they were able to get the door open. The door wouldn't even open the whole way, and one pilot crawled out or jumped out, and then It looked as though, like, you know, Dale Earnhardt Jr. is like handing the daughter through to the pilot. Then he got out, and then his wife got out, and then she got the dog out. And then within 30 seconds or so, the whole thing, and you look at what was left when you look at, you know, some of the news footage, and it's just completely charred up. There's just no way. I don't know. I know you got to get places, and I know that, especially while NBC is doing the coverage, you got to, you know, get places every week. But I don't know. That would kind of shake me a little bit, you know, to where you might consider just doing the tour bus. You know,
right.
It seems like a huge inconvenience, and obviously you got to get places, but I don't know.
And, you know, you got to think, like, Dale Earnhardt Jr., he's been in a couple crashes himself out on the roadside, and he still raced after those experiences. So you wonder if this type of experience, plane-wise, if he will be more prone to staying with vehicles, or if he's just kind of scared of both. And, like, his father died in a fiery car crash. So it's one of those things where, you know, what is the, do you, especially with the daughter, she's very young. Does she know what was going on? Well, is she going to be?
I think it's that, well, of course, I don't think that the baby's not going to necessarily remember that. And I think as a driver, and we talked with Ricky Craven a little bit about that, coming up and through all that, there's an inherent risk to being a race car driver. I think you accept that. I think your family, the people that you know, love, the people around you, accept that things can happen. But when that risk is extended to people that you don't want, that you're not willing to accept that risk for, I don't know. Or maybe you just shake it off and say, well, what are the odds? I guess, I don't know. It's one of those things that kind of makes you think. So, yeah, we'll give it some thought. I think it'll be interesting to see what was the actual cause, whether it was pilot error or something mechanical. And things only work till they break, right? And so that's just kind of the way that goes. On the road trip side, and we've got a couple minutes left, but you're going to actually be taking a road trip. And this is a great way. We talk about road trips all the time. Last week, we had Jan Kemmerling on, the director for the Office of Tourism here in Illinois, talking about great locations, great places to go, and including the luckiest place, one of the top luckiest places in the world, which is rubbing Abraham Lincoln's nose. He's got a big statue down at the tomb. It's not really a statue. It's his head. So I don't know if statue means the whole body, but there's a lot of great places to see, and it's a great way to go, whether it's to go see your favorite sports team, you know, travel to a different place, or maybe a concert. And I've definitely done that, because one of the things that is here, when if you're on a concert tour or maybe sports or whatever, things are expensive here in Chicago. So Ashley, you're going to hit the road to St. Louis, right?
I am hitting the road to St. Louis to see a band called Angels and Airwaves. They are playing in Chicago the night before, but tickets here are significantly more expensive. So my boyfriend and I were thinking that why not make the money that we would spend on a ticket in Chicago into a road trip?
Like a little vacation?
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to get you. So Pappy's down there, Sugar Fire Smokehouse down there. There's some great barbecue down there. They've got a couple places. It isn't compared to here, but there are places to go. Wasn't it Chris Bryant, I think, for the Cubs, who they started some sort of war? He said it was boring. But not for you, because you have activities planned, right?
I do. We're going to go see the Arch. I've never been down there. My boyfriend has, so he's going to show me around, and we're going to go to the concert. We're going to have some fun.
That sounds great. All right, we're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to preview. We've got a big show next week as well, so keep it here. It's On the Road, 720 WGN.